We're in Shmuel Aleph. We're finishing Shmuel Aleph today. We are on Perek Lamed Aleph, the 31st chapter. Pasuk Dalet, which is the very bottom of page 192 in our packets. We saw last week, we spent a lot of time on Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet, let's just read it over one more time, which discusses a battle between the Jewish people and the Philistines, in which the Bnei Israel were losing very badly. Most of the Jewish people ran out off the battlefield. Some of them stayed, including the king and his children. Pasuk Dalet says, as he noticed that the archers were coming closer and his time of being killed was rapidly approaching, Vayomer Shaul Lenosi Caleb, he turned to his weapons holder, Shalof Charbcha. Shalof Charbcha, as it's translated Mr. Sion, is Inyan Votsas Hacherev. Remove your sword, Vedak Reiniba, and pierce me with it, stab me. He asked his companion to, in essence, kill him. Pen Yavo Harelim Hoela, because otherwise, if you do not kill me, these Harelim, literally the uncircumcised ones, which is a term for the Philistines, they will take me udkaruni, and they'll end up stabbing me and shooting me with arrows. Vishalubi, as Masud Sion translates, that is an inyan of lags chokil bizoyon. They'll humiliate me, they'll embarrass me, they'll make a mockery out of me, and therefore I wouldn't want such a thing. V'ova Nosi Caleb Kiyorim Od. However, the Nosi Caleb, the ones that were holding his weapons, his armor bearer, was unwilling to do as Shaul requested. He did not want to kill Shaul because he was very afraid. Concludes the pasuk. Veikach Shaul es acherev veyipol aleha. So Shaul, realizing that he was not going to be killed by his armor bearer, he took his own life. He took a sword and he committed suicide. He killed himself. And we spent about half the time last week discussing how is it possible that Shaul would be allowed to do such a thing. Shaul, who was told by Shmuel Hanavi that he was going to die on the battlefield and be zochet to Olam Haba. How could someone commit suicide? So we saw on the second to last pages on our handout, on our packet, four different interpretations as to why Shaul was allowed to do so, quoting the words in the Mishpatot Zahav. And we concluded, and we can just quickly see the second last paragraph on page Tuf Kuf Yud Zayin, that it says, it's very three lines, the second last paragraph on that page, it says, Nimsa de Dalad Svaros Ika. There was actually four logical interpretations as to why Shaul was not considered to have been in violation of suicide, that it was an anos, it was something which was beyond his control, and therefore he was not held responsible for killing himself. And the four, which we saw in great length, which we'll just see quickly again to remind ourselves, Aleph, one of them was Shahaya Yari Machmas HaYisurim. He was concerned because of the Yisurim, the pain and torture that they would cause him. Shiavruhu Al Hadas, that because of the torture, he would not be able to withstand it and possibly even turn himself away from the Derech Hashem and not follow Torah and Mitzvos. And therefore, there are those that say, based on being tortured, that the person would be allowed to actually commit suicide so as not to have to undergo such a nisayon, such a test. A second explanation, Shehoi Yori Shiipul Kam V'Kam V'Nafashos Mi'Yisrael Sheyirtzul Hatzilo. If he would have been held captive, all of his soldiers would not have allowed him to live in such a status under the Philistines in a jail, and therefore they would have tried to save them. And he knew that any Jewish person, as through the prophecy of Shmuel, that would try to fight against the Philistine would lose. And therefore he realized that going against all these Philistines to try to save him, they would all die. Many, many more Jewish people would die. So in order to save in the future Jewish lives, he was allowed to take his own life. And we discussed last week how there's some certain shalos and tshuvos based on that. For example, in the Shoah, we mentioned the Holocaust, that some of the more difficult shalos that are asked, such as if a person is in hiding and you're with an infant, and there's many, many people, and that infant is screaming and crying, whether or not one is actually allowed to take that child's life, which is unbelievable, but it's in order to be able to save everyone else, because otherwise their hiding place would have been revealed. And there are opinions that say that you can actually do so, which obviously is horrifying, but nonetheless, that's what we see from here as well, that Shaul took his own life in order to preserve future lives. Gimel, Shehayar Mechil Hashem, Shehizal Mashiach Hashem, since he was the anointed one of God, for him to be tortured and to be belittled, to be humiliated, that would cause a Chil Hashem. In order to avoid Chil Hashem, you're allowed to kill yourself. Just like when it comes to a person says, worship an idol, or kill yourself. So it's a mitzvah, it's a Kiddush Hashem to give up your life. Not to kill yourself, but for a Kiddush Hashem, you're supposed to give up your life and not commit murder, adultery, idol worship. So on the same level, when it comes to preventing a Chil Hashem, then your life can be taken as well. And finally, Shaybatuach b'misasa b'nevuah, since Shmuel told him, you will die on the battlefield, it was necessary for him to do so. So if he was going to be held captive by the Philistines, then this prophecy would not have been mekayim, would not have occurred. It wouldn't have happened. And therefore, he had to die on the battlefield. If his armor bearer did not do it, then he had to take his own life. Okay. Now, if you actually, since we're on this same idea and the same pasuk Dalid, we can see the last paragraph on this page in the Mishpatzot Zahav. So we'll see this inside because we have it in front of us. It's brought down in Parshas Derachim the following explanation. Skipping the next line, which is underlined, he explains at the question: Madua bikesh Shaul tchila minaro nosikel shihargo. So why did he first ask his lad, the one who's holding his sword, why did he ask him to kill him? And only afterwards, only after he chose not to kill the king, if Shaul was allowed to kill himself anyway, so then why was it necessary for him first to ask the person next to him to kill him? What was the significance of that? So the reason, as it's brought down in the Parshas Derachim, is ki Shaul chashash, that he was afraid, Shaul was, shemitzad sheish avera b'masehu, maybe me committing suicide is an avera, and I'm not allowed to take my own life. Therefore he thought, adif lasos aide shliach, better that it should be done through a shliach, through an agent. So you can say, how does that help? After all, there's a principle, shliach shel adam kamoso, that if I appoint an agent on my behalf, it's as though I'm doing it. So what's the difference if he takes my life or I do it myself? It's because there's a principle of ein shliach l'dvar avera, that the only time we say that you can appoint an agent to do something is if it's for a mitzvah. And therefore, you're credited for having that action being done because you entice the person to do a mitzvah on your behalf. However, for an avera, the Talmud in Kedushin says, Divrei Harav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishomim. If you have a student and a teacher, and you're a student, who are you supposed to listen to? You're supposed to listen to the student that tells you something contrary to the teacher? No, you listen to your teacher. So the same thing when it comes to Hashem. That even though you have a person that says, do an avera, but Hashem's telling you not to sin. So the fact is, you're not allowed to listen to that person. And the fact that you did it on your own, and you didn't listen, it's as akin to you not listening to the student, because you're not allowed to listen to the student. You have to listen to the teacher, to Hashem. And therefore, when Shaul told him to do this, it's not like a regular case of a shliach, because an agent, there is no agency for a sin. And therefore, v'lotisiaches haver alav, by him being murdered by this person, it would not have anything to do with him. And therefore, he would have died without having committed any sin. L'chein hayadif, that's the reason why the Parshas Derachim says it's better that he should have had his life taken by someone else than by himself. But unfortunately, since no longer was he willing to do so, he had to take his own life and rely on the reasons, as we said before. Now the question is, why then did the Nosei Kelev not want to do so? Well, the pasuk says, it says, "Below," he did not want to. It says, "Below Ava Nosei Kelev." Why did he not want to do it? Ki Yarim Od, he was very much afraid. What was he afraid of? He couldn't be afraid of the king he was about to kill. He was allowed to kill. So the reason that he was afraid is that he was afraid of the Avera himself. Because the Torah, just as much as it says that a person is not allowed to commit suicide, which is a different pasuk in Parshas Noach, also in the Aseres HaDibros it says, L'tirtzach, you're not allowed to murder. Now, when it comes to committing suicide, we mentioned last week that the word ach, which is the first word of the pasuk, that talks about how a person is not allowed to take your own life, ach excludes someone who is beyond one's control, such as this case of Shaul, that he had to take his own life. So there are exceptions that sometimes we allow a person to take their own life. However, when it comes to lotirtzach, when it comes to murdering, there are no exceptions. You're not allowed to ever murder. And therefore, he understood, it's better that I should not take his life, because I'm not allowed to. I'm not allowed to kill someone. I'm not allowed to murder. However, you, Shaul, you are allowed to take your own life because of the reasons that we said previously. Before we continue with Pasuk Hey, this is not in our packets, but nonetheless, it's brought down in the Shalos and Shuvos, in the Shuvos Yaakov, as well as in the Shuvos Rabbi Yecheskel. He writes, She'av shel adam atzmo yemutu lahargis atzmo, even in the situation where a person is allowed to kill or take their own life, mikol makom, nevertheless, in reshus l'acher l'hargo, someone else is not allowed to take your life on your behalf. Ve'im mechavin l'hatzel atzma min yisurin asor, ve'dabar tuli b'levu, v'chein adam atzma shudu b'zeh, kevonasur shari avul acher asor. He said one of the reasons why you're allowed to take your own life is because of the tremendous pain and the torture that one's going through. That's only something which you can feel. So you may have the right to do it, but not someone else who does not feel your pain. And therefore, based on the words of the Shalos and Shuvos of the Shavuos Yaakov, we understand the Isser, not only in American law, but also in Jewish law, of what Dr. Kevorkian does. Even though I myself would maybe, not saying that we have a heter to do so, but if you would even have permission to take your own life, that does not give someone else that permission to take your life. You can do it under certain rare circumstances, if it's similar to Shaul, but you, in that same situation, if you're too fearful to take your own life, you are not allowed to have someone else do it for you, as we also see that the Nosei Kelev also realized that he was not allowed to take the king's life. Pasuk Hey. Okay, we're going to finish this this sefer, so we have to move on. Vayar Nosei Kelev Kimei Shaul. So that he, what happened? As we saw, Shaul killed himself. He fell upon his sword. And the Nosei Kelev saw this right before his eyes. Kimei Shaul, he died. V'yipul gamhu al charbo. So the Nosei Kelev also fell upon his sword. V'yamas imo. And he died together with him. So we look at the Radak. The Radak over here, the first part of the Radak, you'll see that a few lines down, I made a larger indentation in which we saw that last week. We're going to see the first one of the Radak is on page 194, the second medium-sized line where it says, Ki Meis Shaul. Okay, we're on page 194. What does the Radak say? Karov L'misa. It doesn't say, even though it literally means that he died, it doesn't really mean that Shaul died. It means he was Karov L'misa. The Nosei Kelev saw that when he fell upon his sword that he was almost going to die. He was dying. Not that he died. Karav l'misa. Come on, but seis nasha ki mesa ki lo mesa dying. It's that he was about, his soul was about to depart from him, but he did not yet die. Ad shamiso hamaleki. Because we're going to see next week in Shmuel Bet, that it wasn't that Shaul himself killed himself, he started it. He ended up, according to some, not really committing suicide. His life was not taken by himself. He did fall upon his sword, but rather an Amaleki who came later on, someone from Amalek, he was the one who took Shaul's life. Kamosha Amar, Luba Sarasal with David, as we'll see that when David encounters someone from Amalek and says over this story, he said, I am the one that killed Shaul. The Efsher, so therefore, that's how we'd have to interpret, even though the Pasuk says, V'yama Shaul, doesn't mean he literally died, it means he almost died, and then someone from Amalek thereafter took his life. That's one interpretation. Or you can say, V'yama Shaul means he really did die, he completely took his life, he committed suicide, and that's how he died. And so what do you mean? The person from Amalek said that he was the one that killed him. Says the Radak, the Esher, it's possible, he cousin of Amaleki. Maybe the person from Amalek is making up stories. Kilo Hamisu, he wasn't the one who killed Shaul. El Matsu Meis, Acher Shenafel Al-Kharba. The person from Amalek saw that Shaul had already died, that he committed suicide, he fell upon his own sword. In order to show favor in the eyes of David, which he thought this would be something which David would want to hear, this person from Amalek said, I'm the one that killed him. Not that he committed suicide, but in fact, it's possible that Shaul did, that the person from Amalek did not touch him. But according to the first interpretation, and according to, as we're going to see in Shmuel Bet, he was actually not completely killed, didn't die, from his own sword. But rather, his life was taken from Amalek. And it's brought down in the Mishpat Tzahav that there is a tremendous symbolism as to why this occurred. Because we know that the sin that Shaul committed, the greatest sin that Shaul committed, was a war against Amalek, in which he showed compassion. And he did not kill everyone from Amalek. He allowed the king, King Agag, to remain. And because he felt very bad. Why should I kill everyone? I should kill the animals. I should kill the children. So the Mefarshim tell us a very profound idea. That it was appropriate that the person that shows compassion, he should die by the person who he showed compassion to. And this is what it says inside. We don't have this in the packet. It says, V'risa lomer tam, we can see the reason, Lama sheneherag bidei ger Amaleki dafka. Why did he die from someone from this nation of Amalek? Kivan shu haniach es agag b'milchamas Amalek v'chamal olam. He had rachamim, he showed compassion to the king of Amalek. V'kach, for this reason, nigzar shemisaso tia biad ger Amaleki. Therefore, he should die through their hands. To his own nation, this is his punishment. D'chol hamarachim al hachzarim. If you have compassion and are nice to people who are cruel, sofo at the end, shem nasim achzarim al misharichem aleihem. They will show cruelty to the ones that showed compassion to them. And unfortunately, we find this in real life, that sometimes we're nice to people, and maybe they're not the nicest people, and they start taking advantage of you, and as soon as you stop being so nice to them, they start being the most nasty and rude people to you, and cruel people to you. So this is the message that the Mishpat Tzahav also explains, that it was appropriate that he should die, according to at least the first opinion of the Radak, in the hands of someone from Amalek. We look in the English, on page 195, we find, quoting the words of the Abarbanel tells us something tremendous about this Nosi Caleb. The Nosi Caleb, the armor bearer, was not just some guy that was in the army. He was a tremendously loyal soldier. The Abarbanel comments that the lad was so overcome by his master's death that he preferred death to life. As he had escorted his master in life, so he escorted him in death. Moving on to Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Vav tells us, Vayamos, Shaul died. Shloshes Banav, his three sons that we spoke about last week, they also died on the battlefield, including Yonasan. The Nosi Caleb, who also, as we just mentioned, killed himself, took his own life. Gam Kol Anashav B'yomahu Yachtav. All of these men, Yachtav, together. And it's brought down in the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar explains that why do we have to mention this? We already know that Shaul died. We know that the Nosi Caleb died. We know that his three sons died. It's written explicitly in the various psukim. And the Kli Yakar explains that as Shmuel promised, that you will be In Olam Haba, Imi b'mechitzasi, you will be on my level. You will be on the same madrega as me, as Shmuel, so too all these other people. That Shaul and his three children, as well as the Nosi Caleb, all of them will be on the same madrega in Olam Haba, Imi b'mechitzasi. So that's how the Kli Yakar explains why they're all written together. Pasuk Zayin. Vayiru anshei Yisrael asher be'ever v'emek. The Israel, the Jewish people, heard about what was happening, that the Jewish people, their army was being destroyed, and they ran away. These people that were living, Be'ever HaEmek, Be'asher Be'ever HaYarden, they heard, Ki Nasu Anshe Israel, that the men, that the soldiers of Israel had fled, they ran away. V'chi Mesu Shaul Vana, and what's more, Shaul and his three sons had died. Because of this, obviously, they weren't interested in staying in their hometown, knowing that the Philistines would probably come and plunder away. Therefore, the pasuk says, "V'yazvu es ha'arim," they had forsaken their cities, they left their cities, abandoned them. "Yanusu," and they ran away. "V'yavo plishtim v'yeshvu bahen," so the plishtim not too far behind, ended up going to these very cities and dwelling therein. We look in the English on page 195 for Pasuk Zion. It says, logically, why they ran away, the very bottom left. It says the people abandoned their towns because, first of all, since the army had fled, there was no one to protect them. And second of all, without the king, there was no one to rally the nation to their defense, as Shaul had done when he became king. So explains the Malbim. So therefore, they felt the best thing they could do was to run away, and so they did. Pasuk Ches, Vayehi v'macharas, and it was on the next day. V'yavo plishtim, the plishtim came, l'fashet es hachalon. L'fashet is brought down in the city of Sion as l'hasir bigdehem, to remove the garments and all the valuables that were being on the bodies of the corpses of those that they had murdered on the battlefield the day prior. So they went onto the battlefield to take their enemies' jewelry and whatever they can find of value. And what did they find on the battlefield? Not money, but something even more valuable. V'yimsu es Shaul v'shlosh esbana. They found Shaul and his three sons, Noflim Bahar HaGilboa, that they had fallen in this particular mountain. They fell and they died in this particular place. So what would they do with their remains? Would they show kavod Habrios and bury the king? After all, he's dead already. No, they would add salt to the wound and do as follows. Pasuk Tes, V'yichrasu es rosho, they cut off his head, the head of the king. V'yashitu es Caleb, and they removed his garments from upon him. V'yishalchu be'eretz plishtim, and they sent his remains to the land of Plishtim, Subim, all around. They paraded his remains. Levaser Beis Atzabehem, in order to also inform the Beis Atzabehem, which we'll see in a second, the Mesudas Sion is their house of worship, Vesham, and their nation. That's an interesting word for a house of worship, or a Avodah Zarah, is a house of Atzav, of people who are sorrowful, people who are worrying, people who have a negative emotional feelings. So as Mesudas Sion says, that's appropriate, that that's what we should call a base Avodah Zarah. Why? So says the Mesudas Sion over here, Anshe base Avodas Kochavim Hakruim Atzav. The people who worship in this house of idol worship, they bow down to rocks and to stones and to wood, those are people that are Atzav. Those are people who have sorrow, who have worry. Kimatsivim leiv oivdehem, because those who serve them do not receive much benefit. They are sorrowful even after they do the avoda. Soakim alehem, they scream and cry and pray to these inanimate objects. Ve'enim onim, but they do not answer. And therefore, that's why it's called Beitz Atzabehem, because people go there and pray and pray, and they're not answered, obviously, because they're praying to nothingness, to a god with a lowercase g. Now, it's interesting, in contrast to the Urim V'Tumim, the Urim V'Tumim, we would go to the Kohen Gadol, ask questions, to be able to determine what our future, what our fate will be as Klal Yisrael. And not only would they be able to tell us what happens in the present or what happened in the past, but it can even tell us the future. It can forecast what we should do. Should we fight this war? Should we not fight this war? So when it comes to our avodah, when it comes to service to our God, in that situation, our God, our house of worship, can even tell us what the future will be. But for them, the idea of the Masudah Sion is that their idols, you need to actually go and bring proof to them what happened in the past, because they're not even able to determine, the idols can't determine that which even happened in the past, how insignificant they are as opposed to our God. Pasuk Yud. V'yasimu es Kalev beis ashtaros. And they brought these garments which belong to the king to beis ashtaros. Beis ashtaros is translated in the Masudah Sion, is also a name of avodas kachavim, some type of idol worship, some type of an idol. So they brought his clothing to this idol. V'es gviaso taku. And Gviaso is translated as Gufo, Masudah Sion says. His body, Toku, says Masudah Sion, Tolu. They hung his body, Bechomas Beis Shan, by the wall of Beis Shan. So what they did is they had his body, they chopped off his head, and his head was placed by this idol. Right, and when it came to his body, they hung it by a wall. So this way, everyone who'd walk by the wall would see a shawl without his head, and just his remains, to obviously indicate that the Jewish people are extremely, extremely weak. So we look in the English on page 195 for Pasuk Yud. It says that the reason why it was done, as explained by the Malbum, presumably, the Pelishtim chose to display the head in the temple of Dagon in vengeance for the punishment that God had inflicted upon Dagon years before, after the Philistines had captured the Ark of God and took the Aron in the very beginning of Shmuel Aleph. They had brought the Ark to Dagon's temple, and the idol tumbled down, breaking off its head and arms. Now the Philistines reveled in displaying the head in their nemesis, in their very place where the idol had been decapitated. So as our God was chopped off, so too your great leader, his head will be in that very place to show the greatness of our idol, Dagon. And Dagon, which you can imagine comes from the word fish, similar to the Pisces, which represents in Egypt the ultimate strength of animal and human being. The lion and the person represents the physical strength and the intellectual strength. So too, that's what they did, except it was not a lion, but rather it was a fish. It was part fish, part human being, almost like a mermaid. But it was that was what their avodah zarah was, called Dagon. So they used this as an opportunity to show that their God, lowercase g, is more powerful than Shaul, and therefore his head was displayed in such a manner. Pasuk Yudal. V'yishmu elav yoshe yavish gilad. So the Jewish people heard about this, and this was not something which they could bear to stand. Es asher asu plishnim was Shaul. Not only did Shaul die, but the way that they're treating his remains, putting his head in one place by an idol, and having his body dangling upon walls, this was not something which we could tolerate. V'yakumu kol ish chayil, so all of the soldiers that remained got up. V'yelku kol laila, they spent the entire night traveling to get to this wall. V'yuchu es gviyas shol, at least they didn't take his head, they took the body of Shol, which was hanging in the wall of Beis Shan. V'yis gviyos banav, it wasn't just Shol's body, but also his sons' bodies were also hanging Michomas Beis Shan on the wall. V'yavo Yavesha v'yisifru osam sham. So they went to Yavesha and they burned them there. We'll have to explain what it means they burned them, because we do not believe in cremation. So what exactly does that mean? We'll get to that in a second. But we see from here a very important idea. Shaul took his life, according to one explanation, because he knew that if he was held captive, that his soldiers would come and ultimately possibly die. And we see this is true, that even after his death, they came to rescue his remains. Perhaps because if he was alive, they would have held him with more soldiers and Jews would have died. Here, he was just being displayed on a wall, so in the middle of the night, for him to be removed, probably no one was guarding the remains of Shaul, and therefore they were able to take it back. So, but we see that certainly is the case. But what exactly does this mean? Beisrahu osam sham, that they burned them there. Do we not say that cremation is against the Torah? So there's a few explanations. First of all, let's see the Masudas David. The Masudas David tells us when it says they burned them, it doesn't mean the bodies. It says the Masudas David, al kli tashmisho yomar. It's talking about the vessels which were used by the king, not the body of the king. Kikain haderech, this was the way. Lisrof kli tashmishi hamelech, to burn all of the things that the king would use in his lifetime. Laval yishtamish mehem acher, so that no other person thereafter will use it. And in fact, it's brought down in the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchos Malachim, which we don't have in front of us, but it's just a couple of lines I have to share it with you. It says in the Laws of Kings, quote, the Rambam says, Kavod gadol, the tremendous honor, nohagim b'melech, that we place upon our kings, v'simen lo ema yisera b'lev ko'adam, so that we'll be able to have instilled upon every heart of a person fear and trepidation for that king. Shnemar, as the Pasuk says, Som tosim alecha melech, you should place upon yourself a king, in which we learn out from there, Shedhe emaso alecha, you must always show fear to this king. In fact, the Talmud says that when it comes to, let's say, for example, a parent or a teacher, they're allowed to be mochel on their kavod. So if they wish, they can say, it's alright, you can sit here, you can sit in my spot, it's no problem. You don't have to stand up for me when I walk in the room. I'm mochel. However, when it comes to a king is not allowed to be mochel in his kavod. He is not allowed to be forgiving. We have an obligation to always show fear to a king. And a king, even if he doesn't like all the honor and respect, doesn't make a difference. He still has an obligation to accept it. And because of this, says the Rambam, Ein rochvin al suso, you're never allowed to ride on his horse. Ben yoshvin al kiso, you're not allowed to sit in his chair. Not only his throne, but any chair. Then mishtamshin bisharbito, you're not allowed to use his scepter. Though bekesro, you're not allowed to use his, sit, even try on his crown. Though beechem mikol klei tashmisho, nothing that he uses. Ukashu meis, says the Rambam, that when he dies, kulan nisrafin lefanav, everything needs to get burned in front of him. As though to say, as the Matsudas David says, that we are not allowed to partake and use anything that belongs to the king. And to really to make sure that occurs, because after he died, who's going to use it? Well, he's alive, he can use it. He's dead, no one else is allowed to use it. And therefore, we destroy it, we burn it. So that's one explanation. So that's a more palatable understanding that they burned them. It doesn't mean they burned him, the king. It means they burned the garments and all the different things that he... That he used. Okay. Obviously, when it comes to being mocha on your kavod, some people are the opinion that it's better to be mocha on your kavod. My Rebbe in Miami, Rabbi Zweig, was the exact opposite. He was very machben on his kavod. In fact, when you go to his living room, where people would come, he'd always have people at his house for Shabbos. He had a big, big chair, and everyone would be waiting on all the different couches, and no one ever would sit in this chair. That was the Rosh Hashiva's chair. No one would sit in that. That was his chair. And of course, when he would walk in the room, everyone stands, even though on one level you can say it's Bittul Torah, and he doesn't need it, but he's not doing it necessarily for himself. He's doing it to instill a certain level of respect that we should feel for Talmidei Chachamim within ourselves. He's not doing it for his own kavod, he's doing it so we should understand and appreciate the greatness of a scholar. Continues the Radak. The Radak gives two other interpretations. One of them is pretty pretty much out there, but we're going to see it nonetheless. The Radak says, which is toward the bottom of this page, Eshar, it's possible, Shayadaito Kemoshikasura Vostena Zechrono Vracha. That maybe the idea of this burning over here is as our rabbis of blessed memory say in Tractate Avodah Zarah, Sarfin al Malachim, that we burn things for kings. Mahim Sarfin Lehem, what do we burn? This is similar to what Mesudas David said. We toss on their beds, Kli Tashmish, and anything that they use. That's one interpretation. Oh, another explanation, Daito al Sreifas Besamim. When it says that they burned, it doesn't mean they burned their bodies. It means they burned incense and spices in order that there should be a nice fragrance by their remains. Kimo, also as it's brought down, V'yachnichu harofiim, that when it comes to Yaakov, when he died, the doctors embalmed him. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that they removed his blood, because we're very machbid not to remove any blood to save it all. Even when it comes to, let's say, for example, for Tahara, which I was privy of doing over 500 when I was in Miami. I used to do about 3 or 5 Taharas, as much as 5 a week. And we're always very machbid, even after the death, not to to lose any blood. Anything that was kept, we always put into the casket. So the actual process that they used to preserve the remains, which the Egyptians were experts in, preserving the remains of the deceased, it was done not necessarily through drainage of blood. It could have been done through sreifas besamim, using some type of spices or incense, different mechanisms to preserve the body. So that may be what it means. But the Radak does say you could actually take this literally. The Yiskel Afarish, it's possible you can explain, ki habasar sarfa, that they actually burned the flesh of the king. They actually did burn his body. Sha'ala rima, why? Because of the way that they treated his body already. His body was already filled with maggots, with bugs. It was a complete lack of respect for him to be buried with all these worms and bugs all over, which were already embedded into his flesh. It would have been disrespectful for him to be buried that way. Therefore, they had no choice but to burn his flesh off and bury only his bones. So normally, it would not be allowed, but according to this opinion, they felt it would show greater respect to bury him without his flesh because of what happened to it based on the lack of respect of Kavod HaMeis of the Plishtim. So that's how it's explained. So at least, also when it comes to cremation, person is completely cremated, they burn everything, the bones, until there's nothing but a little ash left. And that's certainly different than just burning the flesh and burying the bones of a human being. Okay. But nonetheless, that's something which we still would not do normally. But under this particular circumstance, because he was a king, it would be disrespectful for him to be buried in such a manner. Okay, let's conclude this Sefer and Perek with Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayichu es atzmo sehem. So they took his bones. That's how we can interpret that he, based on these three words we just read, that really he did have his flesh burned off by the Jewish people, and that's why it says vayichu es atzmo sehem. They only took his bones. That's all that's left of him. Vayichru tachas eshel. And they put him underneath an eshel. Explains the Mesudas David, an eshel is an elon, it's a tree. Bayabesha, they took him by a tree in Yavesh, no name of place. Beatsumu shivas yomim, and Beatsumu says in Mesudas Sion his anu. They fasted for the period of 7 days for the loss of this tremendous king. We conclude on page 196, telling us a very important message of Shaul. As Shaul died, and we saw that he was constantly chasing David, wanting to kill him. Numerous occasions when David really did nothing wrong, one could be led to the possible mistake to think that Shaul was not a good person, that he was a Russian. and we look on the English on page 196, we see quite the opposite. Indeed, on the right top, it says the Talmud teaches that God himself testified that Shaul was even more righteous than David. And it says in the Talmud in Moed Ka'am, had David been Shaul, and had Shaul been David, notice if David had the same tests in the Sionot that Shaul had, God would have destroyed many Davids for his sake. Furthermore, the Medrash in the Bereishis Rabbah says that seven righteous men were killed by the Philistines. Chofni, Pinchas, Samson, Shaul, and his three sons. So clearly we see that Shaul was a great man, and as David will show in his eulogy in the next chapter, which is in Shmuel Bet, his loss was a great tragedy for the entire Jewish people. We'll stop here.